a self-starter and intense young leader, son of a superhero. He was part of the organization that let him build, learn, and lead result-oriented teams in financial services across geographies in India. He is an artificial intelligence and digital enthusiast, agile, avid reader, writer, guest lecturer at leading B schools, and keynote speaker at various forums. He was elected by the cohort to be the graduation day speaker at Harvard Business School. Challenging tasks, climbing new peaks, being close to nature excite him and has been his passion both on and off work. His passion also includes gym, yoga, swimming, coaching, mentoring people and startups to reach higher levels of excellence. He is known for putting mission and team ahead of anything. In today's episode, let us learn more about Senthil Kumar Rajendran's career journey and also get his insights on startups.
Hello. Hi there. Welcome to the Guiding Voice podcast series, The Guiding Voice for a Better Future. This podcast is to help professional students, IT employees, and entrepreneurs to shape their careers. Dear listeners, in every episode, we interact with industry experts or thought leaders or academicians or coaches across the globe to drive some insightful conversations that will help our audience learn great things. Also, we share an interesting trivia or a fun fact about the IT world or technology towards the end. So stay tuned till the end. Thank you so much for tuning in. This is your host, Naveen Samala, and with my co-host, Sudhakar Nagandla. So folks, today we are going to discuss a very important topic, which is about the key things that startups should focus on other than valuations or becoming a unicorn. And we are pleased to welcome Senthil. Senthil, thank you so much for being part of TGV's journey in terms of shaping the lives and careers of millions across the globe.
Thank you. Thank you for the invite. And I'm glad to be here.
Senthil, can we get started?
Yeah.
Senthil, can you talk a bit about your career journey and a couple of things that helped you in becoming what you are today?
All right. So I started very early. After my school days, I started working. Perception that I had that time is that only academics wouldn't be of help. So I was pursuing my work life and academics at the same time. So it also made me a better person as a professional. When I finished my graduation, I had 3 years of hands-on experience in workplace. So I've started my career with sales and transitioned to become a business development executive. And it's been 20 years now, finally ended up in the space of strategy, growth, and investments. So from sales, what I learned is, you know, what happens at the customer plays in terms of their proposition, value, and interest. And then how a team gets building a business. And finally, when you build business, you also get to see the value point is, which leads you to strategy. Since my business was highly in the area of financial services, the touch of investments was always been there. So that's my journey from sales to business development to strategy and investments.
Hitting the right chords, right? You started as a business development executive and sales, now into strategy, investment, growth, primarily focusing on value pointers. Amazing.
Thank you.
So Senthil, you know, now that you are more focusing on strategy, investment and growth, can you please share your perspective about the startup ecosystem in India? How is it different from West, say, from Valley or from Israel? How are we different?
Okay, so India is always different. In whatever we do, we have our own way of doing things. So we are an emerging market. What does it mean, emerging market, or how is it different from developed nations? Is emerging markets, you know, you have a lot of structure, a lot of facilities or infrastructure which is absent. And now that gives you a lot of scope as opportunities to fill them and make a lot of returns. Yes. But at the same time, it's not going to be a smooth ride in the emerging markets. It will have its own shocks because of these structures not being present in. Government is doing its part. But then there is a journey which will take its own sweet time for becoming what we have to be becoming. Silicon Valley is a different place to be completely because success breeds success, right? So they have cluster which is highly concentrated with innovation, which is boosting innovation and a lot of money going for research on innovation. And once you validate the idea or test it, there's enough amount of growth capital waiting there for you to scale up. Most of the startups are the product of the startups itself. And that cluster helps in not just getting the ideas together, but also give it shape by way of getting talent pool and the capital as well. Mind you, this capital is not just only US capital. This is the capital across the world, which is chasing products and solutions and technology and innovation in Silicon Valley. In Indian context, yes, we are doing our bit. So far, Bangalore and Bombay and Gurgaon is evolving or emerging to become the startup place purely because of availability of talent and the capital now.
That was a great summary, Sendhil. I think you brought in the perspective of West as well as India. And looks like this is an exciting time. And I would like to continue on the topic of this startup, talking about some of the recent unicorns among the startups, okay, which are influenced like Cred, Meesho, ShareChat, Grow, FarmEasy. These are a few companies which can be named. And there is a trend among these startups saying that I have to become a unicorn. What do you think are the influencing factors for this kind of mindset?
So the mindset is one way good. I would say one way, subjective with the disclaimer. If a value creation is validated by capital, it's a private capital, then it's a very good thing. But you have to also understand that we are living in an environment where the capital is very easily available. And there is, in fact, excess capital in the market now, purely because of the Fed factor in the US and RBI factor in India, or all central banks factor across the world, there is a lot of capital available. So what does it mean is unicorn in 2013 was very less because private capital was very conscious chasing businesses which real has value in it. And so the number of VCs operated for private capital those days were also very less. One advantage now for us is we have a lot of capital available in India. And one of the examples is Zomato getting listed also now with a good valuation. So the absence of capital to chase good businesses is not just a place now. We have capital. So what is important is our business models getting built with the idea of value creation and then valuation happening as a byproduct, or startups are looking at value creation itself as a goal. Now, the value creation agenda has to be the root, and the journey can have valuation also. But then when we start focusing on valuation creation because the environment provides you excess fuel to create that, then it generally doesn't end up very well, because at any point of time, investors need to get return. It can come from another investor as long as the capital is available easy. But at some point of time, customer has to pay, and that can only come as a return to an investor. So cut short the long story short, now the environment is more about business houses convincing the investors to get capital than the customer. But it cannot be like this for a longer period of time. At some point of time, the product or the value proposition which the startups are wanting to build has to create value for themselves, which has to come from the customer.
Yeah, you brought in an interesting perspective. It is more about getting the investment from the investors. But if we consider our economy, we are in a kind of freebie economy where the customers are always looking for something free. The way Uber, Zomato, everything has started, right? It all started with a referral bonus kind of thing and all. And definitely it might take more time in terms of getting into a revenue generation model and all. So this is what is the trend. And talking about your role as an investor, you have been evaluating a lot of startups and all. So what are certain common mistakes that you have observed in this whole process, both from the entrepreneur's perspective in terms of generating the value to the customers and also in pitching it to the investors? And maybe you can share your insights around this topic.
So I'll take the lead from your example, which you used, Uber. Uber has not been running for profits for quite some time. And if you notice, if you watch their share prices, it's at 6 months down now. They're not generating profits enough. But is there a value which is created by Uber? Definitely, yes. Because, you know, using a phone to get the convenience and get a cab at the convenience is something, a value which is clearly created. And value creation also happened in scale. But the question or the challenge is, when you are creating value, are you able to capture the value by monetizing it as an important factor? The challenge for Uber is in that front. You can have a lot of people or a lot of taxis in the contract form, but then there is multi-homing which happens, which means the same driver is driving for many other places. And sometimes they take the lead from the application, but they don't use the application and the application doesn't get the credit, but they get that 20% also along with. Over to that is, there is a regulation part in some of the places. Even in India, if you go to Goa, you don't have Uber and Ola services there because government clearly wants to regulate it. And the cost of a mobile application to float that, it becomes really easy. So what is important, what I'm trying to say is, it's good to build scale. But at some point of time, the marketing has to move towards profitability. Because, you know, you have both the types of models in startups. You know, you start with profitability and you grow organically. You can completely bootstrap if you have a clear value proposition and pricing. In India's case, I would say Zerodha is a company like that. They've grown on with themselves without expecting any private capital in it. But on the other side, if your scale is large, some point of time you have to bring in value coming, justifying your creation as well. So some of the mistakes I would say people make is, so you have a value and then you have a growth. And then the third part is the brand. Sum together all is what brings the value for the investor or for the business person who's running it. When you don't focus much on the core, which is the profitability, but you focus more on the scale or growth part of it, it's okay. And you build a brand also big, that's okay. But at some point of time, the growth has to justify by way of moving into profitability. This is more so important in technology businesses where you have user usage and then monetize space. You have a Facebook and you have social media companies where first user is important. Of course, the network effect gets a lot of user and viral coefficient helps them to get more of users. And usage has to happen by engaging them as much as possible. But how are you planning to monetize it? Are you going to get somebody else paying for a free usage? Or are you going to charge users itself if in case you want to do that? Is it going to disturb the entire business model, or is it going to continue to turn profitability? Some of the businesses have this big question, and time will answer how many have monetizing ability to burn and continue being in. The other example I would say is a Flipkart. We are an emerging market. We didn't have structures here. We didn't have a proper e-commerce online player with a large scale. You had one side, Amazon, which was organically building the business with value clearly in focus. And you had another side, Flipkart, which was incentivizing users to come on board by giving them vouchers at the cost of the investors' money. But then it paid, even though Flipkart was at loss, it paid because you had a bigger player, Walmart, acquiring them. So they captured the value by creating the base. But everybody speaks about this. Rarely people speak about Snapdeal. So what happens? The winner takes it all. So you need a VC to make sure that no one else comes inside the place where you are playing, and you make sure that you acquire anybody who gives that symptom at all. Now, this is a very risky game because your returns are still not coming from users. And you are in the assumption that somebody else are going to come because you are building it. There is a saying, right? When you build, they will come. If they come, then it's a big deal. I mean, you are encashing and you are monetizing. But if in case that doesn't, or if your customer acquisition cost and the lifetime value is completely in different proportion, then it's very, very hard to justify a growth.
Amazing, Senthil. You really touched the four pillars of the startup, or for that matter, any company, I would say. One is the value aspect of it. Second one is brand. Third one is scale or growth. You know, how about the fourth one? The fourth one is the profitability that you touched upon. So how can startups focus on generating profitable revenue as soon as possible? In fact, bigger question will be, do you think it is really that important to focus on profitability as early as possible? Because in the couple of scenarios that you picked, you know, be it on the Ola or from the Flipkart standpoint, you said it was very critical, but it purely depends on the timing and the maturity and the way or the focus group for that specific service or solution, right?
Right. So profitability is required or not? I mean, it depends on businesses and the market structures they are operating at. If you are in a business where it is highly crowded space and you know that, you know, getting private capital is going to be difficult till the time you squeeze and then show profits for some time. I would take Zerodha as an example, though they don't want private capital. They've outgrown it now. So broking is a complete crowded space in India. And for you to sustain, and even though your business model is completely new, which is completely mobile-only a platform, they were able to pin clearly the value proposition, which the market, rest of the players are still struggling to find out. If your value proposition to the client is pretty clear, and you are able to deliver it at a very compelling price, then if you're playing in a market structure which is crowded, profitability matters. But if you are completely new, and you are innovative, and there are very few players in that space, then growth takes the precedence over profitability. When I say growth takes precedence over profitability, not immediately, but profitability has to happen at some point of time. Because whatever capital fuels your growth is also asking for returns. And that return can happen only if it is paid by the users or through monetized through your partners? So I would say yes and no to this question. It depends completely on the market structure and the product proposition where you are competing with. The basics, if you're playing in a crowded market, profitability matters from the beginning itself.
Thank you for that quick and easy tip. If you are in crowded space, focus on profitability, if not from day one, at least from day two. If you are new and innovative, you know, market will be a little more flexible with you. So focus on growth. You can still afford to focus on scale and growth for a little more time than the crowded space. Amazing. Now, continuing on the topic of new and innovative aspect, what is your advice to those with brilliant ideas, but not so much financial support? So I think I'm more focusing towards the new and innovative area.
It's pretty interesting. I mean, new and innovative ideas have to come. So the idea of capitalism is creative destruction, right? So something new comes in and it removes the old thing or the one which is not up to the mark in competition. You had private banks coming up and eating the share of public sector banks. Now you have technology players eating the share of both private banks and the public sector banks. So creative destruction is the way capitalism is structured, and innovation drives creative destruction to a greater extent. So your question of, I have ideas, but then I don't have capital. Now, one extreme way of answering that question is everybody has got ideas. So why should you get the capital? So customers don't pay you for your ideas. Customers pay for only the products. So your ideas have to be converted into products, and for which you have to test the idea, validate it, and then make it a product. A plus B whole square, everybody knows what the answer is. But the guy who derived the formula actually worked on it to get that formula to all of us. So it's in the idea getting converted to product, the customer pays. And when the product is validated by the customer and when the demand happens, you get a validation from the investor. So if people are there who are really wanting to think differently with innovative ideas, it shouldn't stop with ideas alone, but take shape in terms of prototyping and execution. And then if it is tested and validated, capital, I think India is the least worry now to place to be in. In fact, we are fueled with enough capital to back very good ideas.
That was a very profound statement. Like, customer pays for the product, but not the idea. So start converting your ideas into products. So very well said. And thank you so much for sharing those insights, Senthil. So this conversation has been wonderful so far, but we would like to add some spice to the episode. We'd like to ask you a few rapid-fire questions in case if you are ready.
Yep, shoot.
All right, so here comes the first bullet out of the rapid-fire, Senthil. What is the most adventurous thing that you have done so far?
Okay, so the most adventurous thing is I do trekking a lot. So one of the trek, I went to a peak called Pinparvati, and there was a L journey there. The L journey is supposed to be very dangerous in the peaks because you suddenly turn at the corner of a mountain. Wow. And I was following my guide, and he was a lean and young chap. So he just turned and went off. And I also followed and went. And then there were six people who were behind us who were also wanting to, you supposed to cross that L. And they were pretty scared. And the guide asked all of them to wear a rope around their waist and then cross. So what happened is all six of them slipped. But then, because they had the rope in their waist, they were saved. Now, what that did to me is that, you know what, if it could have happened to me, I was not wearing a rope around my waist, and I would have not been here now to in this podcast now. Now, I crossed the mark very easily, but then that day, entire night, I had a disturbance because I took that risk without realizing what risk I was doing. So that I would say that is the most adventurous thing that happened in Twin Parvati. Yeah.
Most scariest, actually. It is,
of course, adventure is
difficult to imagine.
As well, yeah.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah. Yeah. Moving on to the next one, Senthil. What is your favorite failure?
I started with failure, I would say. I lost a year in my school, and I would put failure as a different definition. That's actually the place where you are fueling your spirit for a bigger bounce. And there you are led to see your actual spirit and soul coming to your face-to-face. And so the excitement that builds during that phase of time generally doesn't happen when you are in your extreme success, you know, journey as well. Yeah, school is 1 year where I lost. In fact, one of the reasons I started working after school is to compensate for that 1 year loss which I had.
Yeah, I get it. Completely makes sense. Okay. Yeah, moving on to the next one. What is the one hidden talent that no one knows about you, Senthil?
I can sit in meditation for hours. I can spend an entire day just closing my eyes and being in a state of stillness for a long period of time.
Yeah. That's mind-blowing, actually. Okay, yeah. Here comes my next one. What has been a question on your mind for which you have never got answer?
I would say I'm trying to get an answer, but there are things. So the world is the way it is, and then you try to see it from your side. sometimes what happens, you don't see the world the way it is because you see it from your perspective. So it makes a lot of sense. People, especially if they are in investments, will understand what I'm trying to say. Because when you're looking at a deal or when you're looking at a stock or when you're looking at a person or the business plan, majority of the time you are biased with what and all happens in your head. And then you look at the plan. This happens to most of them or for everybody. The smartness comes in knowing what percentage of it is happening the way it is or what percentage of it is influenced by the way that you are looking at it. So that's a question which I've yet to find answer, but I'm trying to go through that to see how it is.
Hope you'll find it very soon. And last one for the rapid fire, Sendhil. What is one message that you would give to your own younger version?
Younger version, I would say, are fueled with a lot of courage and a lot of never say attitude and no failures. And so that is a very beautiful part of life. And it's equally important in what direction you run, just not it's about running very fast. Learning continuously and fueling your energy, time and money for also in the right direction has exponential benefits over a longer period of time. And I would also say it's just not investments and efforts, but even relationship and health works on compounding base. So it's never one and then after that, not at all, and then again. But it has to be done with a equal discipline and consistency to see phenomenal returns over a span of longer period of time.
That's an amazing stuff you mentioned about relationships are also on the basis of the compounding effect and all. Perfect. Yeah quite an interesting rapid fire round. With that, I would hand over to Sudhakar for the mainstream.
Thank you, Naveen, and thank you, Senthil, for that amazing rapid fire. Losing an ear in the school to having the ability to meditate for a long time, to scared feeling or I would say more adventurous thing, not than scared. Trekking in an L journey, you know, perspective. And the most important thing, at least from my side, was it is not about the speed all the times. It is about the direction. Because if you are running in the wrong direction at double the speed, you are actually missing out in the double the speed. So thank you. Thank you for that. Senthil, one final question for this session. What will be one piece of advice to those aspiring to make big in their careers just like you?
So define what is big. And it's better that you define what is big than letting the social compulsions or anything else to define it. Because it is not just worthy for satisfying the rest of them than the most important person in the world, which is yourself. So define what is big. And the personal standard or the personal parameters and how you measure yourself goes a long way in fueling energy for yourself to get up every day and go and do what you want. So define what is big for yourself. And go behind that. And you should get into wrong ways if you are clear in what you're directing on.
Senthil, thank you so much for joining us today. It has been a phenomenal discussion, but I really would remember a couple of things for the rest of my life. One, don't get into social conformity. First of all, be clear in your mind what exactly is big or the thing or to be state for you, because that will actually give you the direction. And second, the answer that you gave as against your rapid fire questions last point, race against that direction than in the opposite direction. Because if you are running against it, if you are going in the double the speed, you are only leaving the target behind you, right? So define the destination, the to be state, the North Star or the Polaris, whatever we want to call, and race towards that at whatever pace you are comfortable with, because each one has their own capability and their own skill set, their own compulsions, all of it. Thank you so much. It was indeed great pleasure to talk to you about the startups, but overall life at large. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. And I thoroughly enjoyed the session with you guys also. And very nice, deep, introspective and rapid fire questions.
Thank you so much and pleasure hosting you. Thanks again for being part of TGV's journey in shaping the lives and careers of millions across the globe, Sendhil.
All the best. Thank you.
All right, so it brings us to the trivia segment of today's episode. And folks, today's trivia is about YouTube. And here comes my question. Do you know what was the plan for YouTube initially before it has become the web's video juggernaut? I know you're thinking, but let me tell you the answer. Initially, it was started as a video dating service. In fact, you may check the description when the YouTube's domain name was registered on Feb 14, 2005. It was launched as a video dating platform, supposedly influenced by the Hot or Not application. Interesting, isn't it? Thank you for listening. There is more in store, folks. Stay tuned. Take care. Be safe. Until next time. Bye-bye. And we are signing off for today. See you all in the next episode with another wonderful guest.